The Ron Van Dam Show is not the only cool and entertaining thing that Ron does. He also, well, there's the thing that, no, wait, that's not him. Damn. I guess this is it. It's a good thing someone's listening. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
The following programming is EI, educational and informative.
I don't think so.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you very much.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm the one that looks like me. I'll be entertaining you for the next half hour, so there you have it. Thank you. This is free. I'm not going to ask you to pay anything to listen to this show, because basically you probably wouldn't pay anyway. I've been doing this show for over 30 years. I started doing this show when I was 2 years old. That's funny, isn't it? All right. Theme music by Jason Shaw. Thank you, Jason. Opening stuff and comedy writing by John Shanahan. Interviews set up because of my ineptitudes by Nicole Reed. Others contribute to the program. Some of them contribute jokes. Some of them contribute urine. Yes. Did you ever take a urine test? I'm up all night studying. Let's see, how do you do this? Yeah. When I get a blood test, they also ask for a sample of my urine. And I'm thinking, well, what do you want a sample for? Let's do a whole glass. Come on, man. I'm not cheap. Plenty of urine for everybody. I'm buying around for everybody here. It's so embarrassing to do the urine sample. Am I embarrassing you, by the way? Is this something you can't handle? Is it too soon? Some people say, Ron, why are you talking about urine on a talk show? Come on. Grow up. I did go for my annual blood test recently. I talked about a few days ago that I was setting this up. And yeah, so I go down there and they're confirming my name and my birth date and where I live and how many times a week I shower and all that stuff. And then they hand me a little plastic jar and a bag. And I'm thinking, this is cool. You get a blood test. They give you like a little alcohol in a flask. This is pretty cool. No, apparently not. She says, you can go into the bathroom over there. We need a urine sample. And they're going to perform a urine test on me. Oh, my God. What did I have yesterday that could contaminate the very urine that I walk on? So I go into the little room and I stand there with, is this bothering you in any sense? Should children be in the room when I'm telling urine stories, urine tales from the past? Should people be in the room when I'm doing this? Should any people be in the room? Should children be in the room? Should sensitive people be in the room when I'm talking about urine tests and urine samples? It's just not right. Who does something like this? I don't think Martha Stewart ever did a show about testing your urine. I don't think she did. She did a lot of shows about baking pies and making wonderful summer salads. But talking about urine tests, I don't think so. I bet she had a lot of them when she was in prison, huh? I bet she did. Anyway, so I go into the bathroom and I noticed, but I got enough to fill a gallon, you know? So here's the embarrassing part is handing the little jar in a little bag back to the receptionist. And I'm thinking, what kind of job did this woman have? She sits behind a desk, asks people personal questions, and retrieves little plastic jugs of urine from them. Ew. Ew. What do you do for a living?
I'm a urine collector.
Oh, my. And who are the people that are testing the urine? Are there urine testing machines or something? There must be. I can't imagine how you do this. I don't. How do you test it? This one's a little salty. This one needs a little pepper and some oregano. Yeah, this one's a little off. Check the color, Bob. This one's a little too dark. Yeah, what the hell? Ugh.
How was Mr. Johnson's urine?
Fantastic. I worked on his urine this morning. It was fantastic. This is the best damn urine I have seen in a long time. I've got to tell my friends about it.
Imagine going out drinking, and this topic comes up in conversation as you're having like a pina colada or something. Or
Betty, listen. Last night, I got home. I could not sleep. Mr. Johnson's urine that I tested earlier that day, it was beautiful. I've never seen urine like this. Sweet, mellow, a wonderful bouquet. I didn't test the whole bottle, the whole urine sample. I swished it around the tube, and it was marvelous. It was marvelous. It coated the bottom of the test tube. It was marvelous.
On the other hand, I've never gotten the results of a urine test that said your urine,
unbelievably tasty. They don't do that.
How is your urine? It's fine. What do you want? What do you want from me? What do you want from me? Ladies and gentlemen, nearly 8 minutes of talking about urine testing. Unbelievable. Who does this? Who would do something like this? And that's why you listen to the show, I'm sure. Last night on television, I avoided watching a show. Sometimes I see commercials for shows that are going to be on television that night, and I don't consider them an advertisement to watch the show. I consider them a warning not to watch them. And that's what happened yesterday. Robin Roberts, an interesting name in itself, she's with ABC, and she did a special last night. During prime time, she sat down with the Kardashians. You've got to realize all the Kardashians really are capable of doing is sitting down. I've never seen them do anything. They just sit down a lot. They should weigh 600 pounds apiece, have horrible physical attributes, but they look wonderful because they sit down a lot. Even when they exercise, they very passively do it. And there's always a bottle of wine in their hands or something. It's just, I don't understand the Kardashians. So Robin Roberts, I believe that's her name, she interviews the Kardashians. And get this, she interviews them about how difficult it is to be a Kardashian. Yeah, it looks really rough, honey. It looks really tough. I've got to sit down, and then I've got to sit down, and I've got to drink a little bit more wine, have a little caviar, then I got to sit down. It's not easy. Don't give me that crap. There are people suffering, no food, no home.
can't pay their rent, doesn't know where their next meal is coming from, and you're interviewing these rich bitches. And I don't dislike them just because they're rich. I dislike them because they're dislikable. I guess in the interview, they were going to also discuss, for some reason, why the Kardashians make incredibly horrible choices in who they marry. Oh, they marry all the time. It's in and out, you know, like, I'll marry you. Let's get divorced like in 3 weeks. Okay, fine. Sounds good. It's weird. They marry very weird, unstable people. There's literally something wrong with them. We just can't figure out what it is. Then they apparently were going to... I didn't watch it. I did not watch it, so excuse me. Apparently they were going to discuss how difficult it is to be in the spotlight all the time, how that life can be extremely, excruciatingly horrible to be in the middle of social media 24/7. Let me ask you a question, Kardashians. Who put you there? Who put you there? You did. You and your little executive producer, Ryan Seacrest. You are media whores, and yet you complain about not being able to have a life because you're always in the limelight. Holy crap, man. What, do you think we're stupid? We're supposed to have pity for you? Give me a break. What are you trying to pull here? I'm not stupid, you know. Well, might be stupid, but not for that reason. Have you noticed that all the Kardashians begin with a K and their last name does as well? It's a K-fest. It's a K-fest with this family. Khloe, Chris, Kim, Kylie, Karma, Cokie, Crazy, Cars for Kids. And then the matriarch, Chris, is that her name? Yeah. She marries a guy that eventually became a transsexual. The choices in men that these women have is unbelievably pathetic. It is unbelievably pathetic. Oh, God. Most of us, as we go through our lives, we learn lessons and we try to avoid the mistakes that we've made. The Kardashians apparently like to wallow in it. Well, Ron, I'm talking to myself now. Well, Ron, they're extremely, extremely successful. They own businesses. Their business savvy is incredible. Now, let me explain something to you. I don't know the Kardashians personally, nor by name. I believe Khloe, Chris, and Kim, and Kyle, and all those. I believe it's their dancing names. I believe they all work in strip clubs, and their real names are not revealed because they look like they do. They wear so much makeup, it's not like they apply makeup. They actually live in it. They wallow in it. There is so much makeup, so many tweaks to their face and their bodies. It's making some plastic surgeons incredibly rich. And by the way, why do they call them plastic surgeons? Are they recycling the parts? What's the plastic involved? Where's the plastic? Is plastic not good for you? Anyway, these women, very similar to Trump, were handed the money to them on a silver platter by their dad and by Chris's husband. Very successful lawyer, made a lot of money, and passed it on to the family when he passed. And therefore... they had a lot of money to work with. I don't know how business savvy they are. It looks like they are because all they do is sit there and talk. But they hire savvy people, and the savvy people that they hire, they run the companies. They make it look like they're running the companies. They can't even run their lives successfully or any phase of it thereof. Why am I so down on the Kardashians? Because they, to me, are the poster children for a social media gone awry. It's embarrassing. It's just embarrassing. They are our royalty, and that's embarrassing. I don't get them. I don't understand them. I won't watch any interviews with them. Every once in a while when I'm flipping channels, I'll come across this show that's been on way too long, Keeping Up with the Kardashians. How can you not keep up with them? They don't do anything. I can't keep up with them. They're always moving around and they're always making the... No, you can keep up with them. They don't go anywhere. Well, yes, they go to Paris and they go all over the world. Yes, sitting down in a plane. Then they get out of the private jet and then they're driven to their hotel where they sit down more. And when they're finished sitting down in their hotel and sitting down at the beach with the cocktail in their hands and a little piece of caviar, they get back in a limousine. It drives them back to the private jet. The jet flies with them sitting down in the jet back to the airport. They get out of the airport. They sit in the limousine. They go back to where they live, and they sit down more. I can keep up with them. Keeping up with the car. Like we've got to check in on them, otherwise our lives will be empty. Oh, my God. And Bruce Jenner, I don't even know the new name. I can't remember it. It doesn't really matter because I shouldn't really care. I mean, if he wants to be a woman, great. What the hell does that have to do with me? The problem is, not only is she on television. Sorry, got the wrong pronoun. I don't know the name. I so much don't care. I don't even know the name. You know what it is. I don't. Now he or she is running for governor and political office. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's fine. It's just that you're just as screwed up as your daughters. I don't know if they're all your daughters. I have no idea what you people do. I bet when they have sex, they do it sitting down. Incredible family, an incredible family. And somehow they are shoved into my life subconsciously. It's amazing. So when this thing aired last night, I made sure I was not home because there was no way I was going to even... I didn't even want to get close in number to the channel that it was on. It was locally where I live, it was on Channel 5. I wouldn't even watch something on Channels 4 or 6 figuring that's a little too close to Channel 5. I don't even want to get close to the channel that it's airing on. Kardashians, my ass. Which is actually feasible. All right, let's move on. I have a very interesting guest coming up momentarily on the big program. What day of the week is this? I have no idea anymore. I just lost track completely. And you know what? Doesn't even matter. We're going to take a break. When we come back, our guest.
You may not realize it, but we put these breaks in the middle of the Ron Van Dam Show to give you a moment to stop and think about the fact that you are listening to the Ron Van Dam Show and maybe give you a couple minutes alone with your thoughts to reconsider some of your life choices. Like one of those moments might be happening right now. Are you still here? Well, okay, if that's the way it's gotta be, You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Gordon Postel joins us now. A very interesting story called A Long Shots Story. It's great. Thank you for joining us today, Gordon.
Hey, a real pleasure to be with you, Ron, and your listeners.
I'm always intrigued and motivated by stories that show that we all have our problems and our considerations, but we can turn them around if we have the strength to do so and just open our eyes to make the correction. And that's what your story is about. So let's get into it. Apparently there was a time in your life when things were not going too well.
Well, they were going pretty well for a while until they weren't going well.
Oh, there you go.
but basically my book is about a transformation that took place between 1970 and 1980, a decade basically from 21 to 31. I was on the verge of failing a second straight year at a pretty prestigious university in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. And, you know, just really a three-year debauched period, endless thrills and delights that were really on life support at that point. And found myself jumping from chunks of ice on Lake Ontario as the big ice was breaking up and you know, riding ice floes, really didn't care whether I lived or died. And that was really the beginning of the descent into the abyss, which took me to the nickel mines as a driller in northern Ontario, to unemployment, to a couple of run-ins with the law, to security guard jobs, until out of the blue, you know, and I was a long-standing non-churchgoer, a call to ministry occurred in October 76. I felt this incredible wave of love sweep over me, swept me to my knees. You know, my friends and family thought I'd lost my mind. But I trusted that experience, and I ended up enrolling in seminary in Toronto. I went there from 77 to 80. A really renowned church ended up endorsing me, and I had an incredible amount of support. And so basically in that 10-year period, I went from riding ice floes on Lake Ontario to being ordained by the United Church of Canada.
Now you're a reverend doctor, so congratulations. That's certainly very different.
But you know, my book is really, and people have told me it's very inspiring. I actually set out to write it for myself, and then because of what, you know, friends and family told me, I ended up deciding to have it published. And I've had really a rich life beyond measure. Unfortunately, my soulmate, my wife of almost 38 years, Robin, just a truly beloved soul, she developed early onset Alzheimer's and started showing symptoms in 2014, 2015. So after 35 years of ministry, most of which was hospice work, I retired to care for her, which I did for 6+ years. She mercifully died in January of 2021 before she had to linger with a quality of life that would have been, you know, really unacceptable. But, you know, all in all, Ron, I just feel this underlying sense of gratitude for how my life has been touched by grace and by, you know, goodwill and hope. And my book is really about second chances, you know, like we all need, you know, or many of us need second chances. Some of us need 3 or 4 or 5 chances, you know, but my book is really about never give up hope.
Yes, a very interesting progression in your life. The lesson is also that life is not easy. There are stumbling blocks of plenty involved in them, and it's the way that you maneuver those hurdles that makes you feel like it's all worth it. And you actually found that and helped a lot of people during those 35 years on top of it. Let me ask you, going back to your youth, what do you think caused this tumble downward, or was that something that was progressive in your life anyway at that point?
Yeah, I think it's hard to say. You know, I had a middle caring parents, so they didn't get along, but but I had a pretty, you know, normal middle class upbringing. I think the rubber really kind of met the road when I went away to university, and you know, I found that I just didn't feel at ease. I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin. I had no sense of why I was there. You know, it was sort of like I was brought up, you know, you go to university, but that's all well and good. And I had colleagues, you know, right from day one, they knew they wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer or, you know, an accountant, whatever. But I just, you know, had no sense of direction. And And I discovered alcohol, and alcohol just kind of freed me up from this sense of malaise.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, over time, I acquired other items on the menu, like LSD and Valium and weed. And
yeah, so that was the ultimate tumble at that point, engaging in the self-medication. Totally understand that. And then you turned it around, and that's the impressive part that everybody hopes for.
And I think I was able to turn it around. I had this incredible sort of spiritual epiphany, but we can all have epiphanies, whether it's about maybe changing a relationship, changing a career, whatever. But I think you can have these epiphanies in whatever context they come in, but if you don't have people to kind of step in and help you, you know, you're never going to have liftoff.
Well, sure. Yeah. Let me ask you, your loss is quite recent. I'm sorry to hear. What is in your head? What's forward for you at this point?
Yeah, well, you know, actually, although it's just over a year since Robin died, I'm finding, and I used to hear this from hospice families after their loved one had died, and a lot of literature I've read over the years, but I have a sense this second year, you know, the reality can set in on a deeper level.
Right.
And so for me now, I see that this next year, the year I'm in, you know, it's just really got to kind of stay in the moment, and you know, the grief is actually, I think, on a deeper level for me now.
Sure.
And so it's a question of sort of being gentle with myself, and sort of being aware of maybe where my next, you know, sort of calling, so to speak, is. You know, I think once there's a hospital right across the street from where I live in Jamaica Plain, Boston, and once they, you know, start calling volunteers back, I think one or two days a week I'll go over and volunteer as a chaplain, maybe with oncology patients or patients that are close to death, and, you know, just continue to help people. It's all about giving back.
Yeah, I hope that you continue writing, because that's also your calling. It's quite obvious.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, but on top of that, doing some tours, giving some speeches and lectures, I think would also be very, very helpful and great, because I think people are looking for hope these days. You look under the couches, you look under the pillows, it's not there. So you need somebody to bring
very,
it.
That's very kind of you to say that. And people have told me that. And I think, you know, once things start to open up a little more, yeah. you know, I can see myself doing that, and that yeah. would give me a sense of fulfillment. And if my story, the bottom line is, mm-hmm. if my story can help folks who are struggling, mm-hmm. or even folks that aren't struggling, to realize how much, you know, they're lending a hand can help folks who are struggling,
yeah.
then it, you know, that's the whole point of having the book published and, yeah. you know, going forward.
Yeah, it's interesting, Gordon, that if you dig deep enough into anybody's psyche, you'll find everybody struggling in some aspect.
Absolutely, yeah. yeah. We yeah. all, like, you know, the Buddha, you know, like, mm-hmm. life is suffering.
Yeah, it is, and you need the Buddha people to come out and help everybody. And so,
absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Hey, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. The book is called A Long Shot Story, called as part of the title. Do you have a website or some way people
yes,
can
yes.
contact?
Yes, so my website is GordonPostol.com. So it's GordonPostil.com. And you can, check out the website. You can buy the book off the website, or you can buy the book right from Amazon.
Perfect. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, Gordon. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks an awful lot, Ron. Real pleasure speaking with you and your listeners.
Well, that'll do it for me today. You have been wonderful as usual. Hey, I got an idea. Listen to me. How about if you come back tomorrow and I'll do a brand new show? Yeah. Does that sound appetizing? No? Well, that's what we're going to do anyway. Tomorrow. All right? Put it on your calendar. You have a dental appointment? Doesn't matter. I'm here all day. I'm here. These shows live in eternal prosperity. You can listen at any time to any one of these episodes. There's like over 2,000 of them. Talk about binge listening. You could listen until you die. There's so many of them. So don't complain to me that there aren't enough of these things. There are plenty. Almost as many episodes as Keeping Up with the Kardashians, which I still refuse to watch. That show is so bad that it gives me reason to live, realizing that my life can't be that bad at all. If these little bitches are complaining about theirs, something's wrong. The universe has taken a turn for the worst, but I'm not involved in it. So I don't understand what's going on. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.